ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। नाम श्रेष्ठं मनुमपि शचिपुत्रम् अत्र स्वरूपं रूपं तस्याग्रजमुरुपुरीं माथुरीं गोष्ठवतीं राधाकुण्डं गिरिवरमहो राधिका माधवाशं प्राप्तो यस्य प्रथितः कृपया श्रीगुरुं तं ददोऽस्मि। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयतः पदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणरघुनाथन्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपादान् सहगणललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। कंटिन्यूइंग विद अ डिस्कशन ऑफ वेरियस एस्पेक्ट्स ऑफ पिलग्रिमेज and these will be these are generic for all, whether you're going to Shiva temple or place connected with Lord Rama, bathing. When one goes to a holy place, first one has to bathe. For men, they have to get their head shaved first. Of course, some holy places the bath is the main thing. It's not for purification, for going to the holy place, but it is the holy place. In particular, that means holy rivers and also the holy tanks like Pushkar, Radha Kund. The rivers, they're worshipped as goddesses who have descended to this world to purify us. Physically, by bathing in the river, we become freed from perspiration and other exudations from the body, and also any kind of dirt that might have come externally on the skin. And internally, we get purified by bathing in the Ganga, Narmada, all these rivers. One becomes cleansed from sinful reactions. So in that way one is purified also. But apart from the spiritual purification, there's tremendous material benefit also from the rivers. And that's why in various parts of the world, before people became very scientific and sophisticated and demoniac, rivers, especially large rivers, were worshipped everywhere because the river gives life. Without rivers, there's no life. Then it becomes a desert without the water flow. And that actually happens. That can be seen. According to geologists, may or may not be true, because we didn't see it, but they say the Sahara Desert, which covers a huge part of northern Africa, it was all previously lush green land. It's quite possible, because they may give geological or atmospheric reasons, which may be correct. But also we understand that as people become more and more sinful, then all the good facilities of the earth will be withdrawn, and desert land is required to give shelter of sorts to sinful people, people who are sharing in the sinful reaction of Indra's killing Dadichi, the Brahmana. So the rivers give, materially also, the river gives life. And therefore we find, that's called, they call that the Gangetic Plain, the whole of North India where the Ganga flows, flat land, very good agricultural land, and with so many tributaries to the Ganga, and it's very fertile land, and it's all the mercy of Ganga. And similarly here, Ganga also, we find there are so many major towns along the Ganga. And similarly here, Kaveri Basin, there are so many towns along the Ganga, because it's prosperous by agriculture. The whole area is prosperous by agriculture. Nowadays, the water is not coming through as much as it used to. And maybe in the, this is a worldly observation, but maybe in this state more than any other, the agriculture is not given proper attention by the government and their policy, the state government, and their policies are killing any agriculture. Maybe more in this state than any other. And there's also not getting the Kaveri water as much as they want from Karnataka. Anyway, they could do other things also, like growing ragi instead of rice. Anyway, so we can see that how much the rivers are essential. There's Charnakya says, do not reside in a place where there's no water supply. It makes sense, doesn't it? There's no, a good river, especially a river. Of course, the rivers, they're worshipped also as goddesses. And just like the goddess Durga, goddess of the, she can be very angry and destroy also. So the rivers also, they can destroy, especially if you live right next to them. Or then the river can flood, or the whole course can change. So the whole towns which used to be there, they can just not be there anymore. A prime example of that is Chikmagalur. Huh? Who said that? It's up in the hills. There's no big river there. Anyone? Navadvip in the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was Kulia, it was called. And the original local where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was, that is not the Navadvip town of now. That is Mayapur. But that all went under the river and came back up again. Because Ganga's like that. She changes, especially in Bengal. And even in UP also, until Pandit Nehru had a brilliant idea, or some of his advisors had a brilliant idea to, you know that? They tried to make it all straight, and but as a result, they messed it up. Because that's, and then all the water flows through too quickly, and they made a big mess by trying to improve things, trying to improve. So, bathing. If there's no natural body of water, then one may be made. And just like in any temple here in South India, there has to be a tank, or actually more than one should be. One for the deities, and then there one for the deities to bathe in, and one for the... There can be. It depends how opulent the place is. One for the people to bathe in. The pilgrims. And the bigger the better. A large body of... We find that in Shastra. The best for bathing is a river, a large river with fast flowing water. And that can be understood, because if it's going slowly, then things, any impurities will tend to stick around. They may even eddy and come back again. Throwing dead bodies in the Ganga, they don't stay. They go quickly, because Ganga goes so quickly. And also in the Ganga, so we're told, there's something in the Ganga that any germs or anything that come from dead bodies, within 20 minutes or something, they're finished. Some study was made. 2 hours or something like that. I can't remember. So anyway, by the fast flow, it's very purifying, even physically. And then a large body of water, like a lake, that's considered. Or even a man-made pond, but the bigger the better. And you can see the water remains pure if you have a large body, large in area and deep also. But if it's just a small pond, then the water tends to get stagnant, especially when there's not much rain for a long time. And then you see the ponds, they get covered with these water lilies. And they have to be maintained also. So bathing is essential. Nowadays people may not do all these things because they're in a hurry. The whole concept of Tirthayatra has changed. It's expanded exponentially thanks to the modern transport systems. But at the same time, as we find in almost all fields, and certainly the religious field, that quantity, as the quantity increases, often the quality goes down. So how to keep the balance? That's the whole thing. We want quality and quantity. We want devotees practicing seriously, many of them. So, that's required in a holy place. Actually, even to enter a temple, one should bathe. When I joined, that was it. That was the standard. Everyone had to bathe before entering the temple, before the morning program, obviously. But then if you went back later in the day, I'm not talking about the pujari, I'm talking about everyone that used to... I don't know how ever... I was told that when I joined, and I used to follow it, but then I don't think anyone even thinks about that now. At least the feet should be washed before going into a temple. I saw it in Patna, there's a big Hanuman temple. It's new, it was built in the 1980s, I think. Just outside the station, because there was a big masjid came up, and then the Hindus built a big Hanuman temple there. And they have a system where there's always water flowing, so you can't go into at the entrance. So you can't go into the temple without washing your feet. It's automatic. And they all find that in different places. But that place I remember is very good, because it's flowing water. In other places it doesn't flow much. You probably get all athlete's foot and everything from using the same water as everyone else uses. And it's not very purifying. So, you can bear it in mind. But that used to be the system everywhere. And in some temples, they have taps. Even some houses, it used to be there'd be a tap just outside the entrance to the house, right? So in South India, at least, so people would wash their feet before going in. And now no one thinks of that, hardly. In the temple especially. Supposed to do. So that water, any water is purifying, but then if there's, just like in Srirangam, for instance, there's Kaveri, you immediately bathe in the Kaveri. Immediately, that's... If one only did that, one's Tirthayatra would be complete. But then one goes to the temple of Ranganatha Swami. So it's like, one becomes purified. Then what do you do when you're purified? Then you are eligible to go and present yourself before the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's could be considered symbolically also. The idea that you have to be pure before you can go God, even physically. It's not good to go before someone in an impure state. Just to give a rough example, if a businessman he's called to meet a minister, then he won't go in a lungi. He'll put on a suit and a tie and everything like that. Should look decent and respectable in the consideration of society. So in the same way, we should present ourselves cleanly. Mental purity, that's the most important. But that's one reason we're coming before the deity. And we try to put ourselves in a state of mental purity. But it is difficult to be fully mentally pure, but it's not difficult to become physically pure. One should bathe and put on fresh cloth. That's another important point. Not the same. That's why this system of wearing Western clothing, and you wear the same pants and shirt, and especially the pants, day after day after day. Ugh. Yuck. Whereas in the traditional Indian culture, then every time you bathe, which is going to be two, three, or minimum one time a day, for Brahmanas, three times a day, then you change your cloth. You wash it at the time. You can bathe in the cloth itself, and then that's one way. So, actually a much better culture altogether. The British were very smart in bamboozling the Indians into thinking that the British had a better culture which they should copy. And it doesn't make sense, even in this climate, to wear pants made out of polyester, you know, sweating away. You just wear some cotton cloth. It's fresh and cool. Anyway, so water for purification. When one enters a holy place, and even the bathing in various theaters. If you bathe in the tank, in the temple, the idea is that you become cleansed from sin, at least for that time. Then it's not just physically, but you become cleansed from sins. Then you can go to see the Lord. Don't go without that. After shaving, one should bathe. After pollution comes from if there's a death in the family, a birth in the family, or the women once a month, then you have to bathe. Then you become pure. That's essential. But nowadays people don't do yajna. For people who could afford to do it, or those who knew how to do it, that means the upper caste people, or mostly the people who go to temples, especially the brahmanas, they may perform yajnas in holy places. And especially some holy places are considered most auspicious for performing fire sacrifices, yajnas. Especially Prayag is considered very auspicious. But the thing is, if you perform a yajna at a holy place, you're also supposed to give in charity. Especially giving cows to brahmanas is required. But that's not done much nowadays. First of all, it's difficult to find a proper Brahmin, and probably the Brahmins don't want to keep cows either. The whole system has broken down. They wouldn't personally look after the cow. There would be people who do that for them. So now that whole culture is gone, and it's coming more and more. They don't even allow cows in the cities. They're becoming so modern in Bharat today. But then again, going to a holy place, many times it's said that it's more auspicious than performing a yajna. But then if you do perform a yajna, it's considered, you'll get the results so much more if you perform a yajna at a holy place. So going to the holy place in itself is more than performing a yajna, but if you do perform yajnas, then the holy place is the best place to do it. And some holy places are famous because of the yajnas, especially of Lord Brahma, Pushkara, the first place on this earth that Brahma performed. And then we have Dashashvamedha Ghat. There's both that Prayagraj and that Varanasi, where Lord Brahma performed 10 Ashvamedha yajnas in way back in the history of this earth planet. So those places are considered very auspicious to bathe because of that. On the other hand, the easiest and best yajna is Sankirtan yajna. And by even chanting the name of Krishna once, what happens? Koti Ashvamedha, what is that? Koti Ashvamedha yajna, a Krishna nama sam. Je kahe she pashandi, donde tare jam. If anyone thinks that performing 1 crore of Ashvamedha yajnas is equal to once chanting Hare Krishna, he's a rascal and is punished by Yamaraj for thinking like that. Hare Krishna! So by performing Ashvamedha yajnas, you become eligible to get the post of Indra. So now I can become Indra. No thanks. Vidhi Mahindra adis chakitayate. Well, in the estimation, yat karunya kataksha vaibhavatam tam gaurameva stuma. That Gaura, if we have even a slight glance of his mercy, then we can think the position of Indra and Brahma is no more significant or no more important than that of a little bug. Of course, if Indra comes, we'll offer him all respect. But we understand that Indra today and tomorrow. There's a narration in Shastra about that, how Indra was building his palace and trying to make it bigger and bigger and bigger. And then Vishnu came in the form of a Brahman and showed Indra, said, you see all these ants, hundreds and thousands of ants. Indra said, where they all come from? He said, well, they all used to be Indras. Really? I'm going to be an ant. Then he realized, well, maybe being Indra is not so significant after all. It is in one sense, but in another sense, Kita janma hao jata tu adas, bahimokka brahma janme nahimor ash. Better to be born as a bug if one has the opportunity to serve Krishna. It's difficult to think how you could serve Krishna as a bug, but theoretically it's spoken. Human form of life is generally more expeditious for that. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, even if I get the position of Brahma, but I'm inimical to you, Krishna, I don't want it. And again, it's theoretical, because you're not going to put Hiranyakashipu officially in charge of the universe, or someone with the same mentality. So anyway, the idea is that going to a holy place one is supposed to, yajna. And Srila Prabhupada wrote that in the fourth canto, one of the purports, that just as King, what was his name, performed yajnas all over the earth, can't remember, something beginning with that. He said, the members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness perform Sankirtan Yajnas all over the earth, one after another. We should do it. Go everywhere, perform Sankirtan Yajna. So the idea of Yajna is offering, it's ultimately the spirit of Yajna, Atmanivedana, offering oneself to Krishna. In the Karma Kanda Yajna, you don't actually offer. It's kind of business deal. You offer something, and what do I get back? So there's no question of Atma Nivedan. And for the Mayavadis, there's no question of Atma Nivedan. You can't offer yourself because you already are Atma. So who are you going to offer yourself to? You're already God, they think. So who are you going to offer yourself to? That's why that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says this by this Mayavad, the savior sevaka bhav, the feelings of the Lord who is to be served, and the servant who wants to serve him, that is destroyed. Actually, that's Sri Damodar said that. That is destroyed by this impersonal conception. So yajna, the idea, offering, one should go and give something. At least the beggars are there, you can give them some paisa. They go there and they give a facility for you to give something to them. And if you're in a generous mood you think means you think you're going to get something back, but you can give, people often give, apart from coins, some rice and dal, uncooked, and they may give blankets and so many different things to poor people. And giving to the poor is there, especially at holy places, and also giving to brahmanas, but that's a different thing. The brahmanas, they don't come out and beg, they're not supposed to. They simply accept, and they don't show any. They're not supposed to show any eagerness or elation. Naprasyat priyang prapya, nodvijet prapya cha priyam. They're supposed to be, if you get something nice, you're not supposed to get elated, and if you get something you don't like, you're not supposed to get upset. And so you'll find that if you give something to a brahmana, they won't even, if you say you give something, they won't even look to see how much it is. That's proper. Whatever it is, Krishna gives, he's giving through someone, and you accept whatever it is. And you're not supposed to treat people differently according to the amount they give. Well, that's the higher level. On the other hand, we find that when kings performed yajnas, then brahmanas would come, and he'd be happy to receive them for the very... Just like Bali Maharaj was performing a yajna, and one young brahmana boy came, and it's expected brahmanas will come. The king is doing so, he'll give. He's going to give profusely in charity. So brahmanas go there. They have practical needs also. They need things to live. As a young boy, one of the things Bali Maharaj offered, I can give you villages, I can give you girls. It means... I don't know exactly what that means. If he had Brahmin girls at his disposal, or maidservant girls, or whatever. So that's also required, because Brahmanas are expected to get married, generally. And then they need things to live. And then if they have these things, then they don't have to worry. They can go on with their Brahminical activities. So it's quite a complex and interrelated culture. The yajna is particularly a time when a big king performs a big yajna. It's a particular time when he's giving, giving, giving. Everyone has to offer, especially the king does. So yeah, nowadays people offer something to the deity, fruit, flower. If it's a deity of Kali, they may offer a goat or a chicken. Money is the most obvious thing. People may give rice. We'll find in our temples, when we go to count the money, there'll be some coins, some notes, and some rice. Do you get that here? People put in the box, not much. Things are changing. Bits of rice. Even people come, some people come daily to the temple, and every day they'll bring a handful of rice. Something like that. Or some wheat grains or something like this. One can give jewels, gold, all these things. That's generally on a special occasion. I was just hearing how Prabhupada, on just signing and giving the money whereby he himself became, in his name, the owner of the land, which is Hare Krishna land in Juhu. There were so many supporters there. And then immediately that was done, Prabhupada said, now immediately we should begin the collection. He didn't waste a moment. So Mrs. Shetty, if you know the story of Mr. Shetty with his guns, ready to kill anyone who tried to stop the reconstruction of the temple. That's a long story. So Mrs. Shetty immediately took off her gold bangles. Prabhupada said, good, gold is pure. Good, we started the collection with pure gold and not paper money. Achyutananda Swami used to travel here in South India collecting money for building temples. He was really a magnetic speaker. And he would say in the talks, he'd give a talk and then he'd say, now we're collecting for Vrindavan temple to build a temple. See, all you women have got so much gold, and the gold should be given to Krishna. And so many, they take off and give right on the spot. You can do that also, if you dare. The thing is, they hardly wear gold anymore. They became modern. What else can you offer? Ghee, sweets, you offer, and you get back coconuts. In a Kali temple, you can give some of your blood, pull out your fingernail, give that. We don't do things like that, but some people do. Universal, in every place of pilgrimage, is puja, which minimally means a lamp. If you only offer a lamp, that's arati. Here in South India, harati. Right? It means offering a lamp. It doesn't mean offering incense, water in a conch. You may do that also. We do in our, at least we do in Gauriya Mata Niskon. We offer so many items. But the essential item is the lamp. And we see in Radharaman temple that they just offer, their arati is just a lamp, that's all. And that they may also not do in the hot season because it's too hot. Lamp, flowers, these are offered. And they're always clockwise. Whatever, whether it's Shiva temple or Shakti temple or Krishna temple. So that's a standard thing. And everywhere there'll be incense also, maybe not directly offered in an arati, but they'll be put there. in North India, there's a system of a fixed time for aratis in most temples. And it'll be somewhat long and elaborate, but here in South India, whenever people come, they'll do an arati, isn't it? And the original system is that you can hardly see the deity, not much, because there'll be just some deepam, some flame lamps, and then the archaka or pujari shows the lamp and shows the different features of the deity. Then another major aspect is prasad in every holy place. You give something and you get it back. And again, in Bengal, often people come and just before they come, they bring incense. They have this small wickerwork basket. You buy it just outside the temple. Dala. They have flowers, incense, all these things. A little clay dish with a little wick, and you can light that and put some camphor. So they just light it just before they come, and then the pujari takes and gives it back. And in an active temple, we find in our ISKCON temples also, there should always be a pujari there with the deities, because people come all the time, and they want to give something. They maybe bring some fruit, and they bring a dozen bananas, and then you put the bananas at the lotus feet of the Lord and give half of them back or most of them back, something like that. And then people get prasad also. So in this way, prasad food, prasad flowers. And we find up to the present time that people, they have a great regard and faith in prasad. Pious people. Whatever it is, they throw the water from the arati and people are very happy to get that. Then from the altar, if you distribute... I used to do the arati often at ISKCON Baroda, and then after the arati, give out flowers and tulsi leaves from the altar, and it's just almost like a riot, and people are pushing, they want to get it. So it's nice, they have good faith in prasad. Maha prasade govinde nama brahmane vaishnave swapam punyavatam rajan vishvasu nai vijayate. People who don't have much faith, they cannot understand the value of the maha prasad of Govinda, or of Govinda, or of his holy name, or of the Vaishnavas. So people who it's a sign of piety that they have faith in that. And unfortunately, there are people who don't like that at all. They don't want to take prasad because they're afraid. It's satanic. They think like that. I've had experience. Often you'll find, it depends where you are and what people you're dealing with, but often you'll find Muslims, they don't want to take, and they think you're trying to put a spell on them or something like that. Very unfortunate for them. That their culture has spoiled them in that way. The dust of the holy place, Vraja dust especially, is very famous. It's taken almost like prasad. Put it on your head, you can bring it with you, just give to others. Just like we bring prasad from Nathdwara, Tirupati, and you distribute to others, you can take Vrindavan dust. And coming out of Mayapur also now, it's distributed widely. People can take all over the world. Is Nrisimha Dev's oil, the oil that's offered for bathing him, especially on Nrisimha Chaturdashi. So much oil is used for bathing him. It's put in little bottles and then can distribute. Distribute the mercy. Even people who don't get the opportunity to go actually to the holy place or haven't been at that time, they can also share in that mercy. And we're supposed to share it, just like we find at the beginning of Chaitanya Mangal, that Devi, when she saw Lord Shiva dancing, because he'd got first of all, Narad was dancing, he got so much mercy, the prasad, and Lord Shiva said, "Did you save any for me?" Oh, a little bit in his fingernail, okay, I'll tell you. Then the Shiva starts dancing, and then Devi sees him dancing. "Why are you dancing?" I got some prasad. Did you save some for me? We're supposed to distribute it. We shouldn't come back with empty hands. We should bring something for others to share. Now, the main aspect of pilgrimage is the attitude. If we go like tourists, we won't get the same result as going with devotion. So devotion is the main aspect. But then devotion is not just some amorphous idea. If it was, we wouldn't need to go to it. There is a specific holy place where you go to express your devotion. And therefore there are practices like bathing and offering something to the deity, offering puja. Taking prasad is also part of devotion. It's like people, they're anxious to get prasad. They may not be hungry, but they want to get prasad because they know it's Krishna prasad, it's not ordinary food. So really the devotion is the active principle, but it requires some expression. It's not that we just sit and meditate and think, love, 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 radiate love. But love is specifically for Krishna. Or we may say that, or we put our faith in different deities. So it's a specific thing. The Mayavadis say that you worship a deity and then that's a tool for advancing, and then afterwards you don't need. Then there's a special form, and afterwards you go vishesha rupa, and then you become nir vishesha. Then you go beyond all that. But we don't accept that. That's prakrita koryamani Vishnu kalyabar Vishnu ninda nahi iha upar. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, speaking with the Mayavadis of Varanasi, told them that to think that the form of Vishnu is something material is the biggest offense. So anyway, next time, Krishna willing, I'll speak on more about the attitude in pilgrimage. We've still got a long way to go. This is quite a long session. More than halfway through my notes, but still quite some way to go. So we're having a virtual pilgrimage here as we're all... Why do they call it lockdown? They should call it lock-in. Lockdown gives the idea like you're clamped on the floor and you can't get out. Lock-in would have been a bit more polite, wouldn't it? Anyway, Hare Krishna. We want to get locked, tied up at the lotus feet of Krishna. That's... we want. Kṛta puṇya puṇjāha. As the result of many, many lifetimes of pious activities, we can get the opportunity to play with Krishna like the cowherd boys. Vāñcā kalpa tarubhyascha kripā sindhubhya evacā patitānām pāvanebhyo vaiṣṇavebhyo namo namaha.